Well, good afternoon. The intro seems to have played itself there, Brian. We always have a sort of a slight technical kind of hitch, don't we? But for those of you who are tuned in, welcome to the show today. I'm going to play our little intro one more time.
Connect, the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
And welcome again, everybody, to Kent Biz Connect. Do you know why it sounds a little bit strange today? We're in mono and not stereo. I had a chat with Paul before
we came
on air. Well, again, it's one of these sort of technical gremlins in the studio today. So if you're listening to us on your expensive Bang & Olufsen stereo equipment at home, and I can't see why you wouldn't be, or maybe in the car on your nice stereo.
In mono, does that mean they'll only get one of us instead of the both of us?
That's what everybody's hoping. But no, we'll only be coming out of one ear.
At my age, that tends to happen anyway.
Yeah. But we are a talk show, so there is a little bit of music, which we'll kind of come on to. But, Brian, welcome back.
Thanks, Martin.
You haven't been here for a couple of weeks, have you?
I've been sunning yourself. I've been sunning the bod in Mallorca for a couple of weeks.
Frightening thought. Look, Lynette's chuckling away in the background.
Yeah, well, that's why. Yeah, no laughing, please. How do you know I was joking there? So, I'm showing my tan off. Shorts are donned. And, I look a bit like Demis Roussos, I think, but without the dress, I must add.
Yes, some sort of well-known rotund Mediterranean personality from a bygone era, definitely.
Well, I'll forgive you the rotund as you slid personality in there, so I think I'll allow you that one, Martin. But, yes, it's good to be back. So
it's great to have you back. Tell me, how was the water out there?
And it was absolutely wonderful.
Did you get in the sea?
Loads of it. No sea stuff, just the pool.
You don't do the sea.
Just the pool. And I was kind of going around recruiting new listeners and that sort of stuff. Oh. So, when we look at the listeners, we'll have a lot more Mallorcan listeners this week.
We've got a lot of hits from up north, will we?
Up north. Because I was up north in Mallorca near Alcudia, which is up north. But, people from Yorkshire. And I reckon big shout out to Dangerous Dave from Woking that I reckon will be listening today because he loves all this. So, Kent Biz Connect getting spread far and wide.
Well done.
So
glad to hear it.
I'll put the whole holiday on expenses now. So,
I look forward to that.
Sorry, Mr. Taxman. I was only joking.
So, Dave from Woking. Welcome to the show, Dave. Yeah, from sunny Woking. Fantastic.
And his lovely wife, Sarah. So, she won't listen, but he will tell her about it. So,
marvellous. Well, we've got a couple of fabulous studio guests with us today. So, why don't I ask them to introduce themselves? On my right, we have got
Lynette Wood, the Director of Sales at the Asheville International Hotel.
Welcome, Lynette. Lovely to have you with us. And next to Lynette,
Graham Marley, Chief Executive of the Let's Do Business Group.
Graham, welcome to the show. I know you've both been on Business Bunker before, haven't you? As my guests, I think,
on the show.
So it's lovely to have you on Kent Biz Connect. Welcome back. And you're obviously completely familiar with the format, and you could probably run it yourselves, actually.
Yeah, so, the sliding
making up as you go along, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
I can see them sliding controls up, down, and sideways as we speak. So
that tried and tested methodology there. Make it up as you go along. Absolutely.
It's like a Dreamliner cockpit in here.
Brian, why don't you tell us what's going on in the kind of Kent business community in the news at the moment, because there's always something happening.
There generally is, isn't there? And as I'm just back UK based, I've no idea what's been going on over the last 2 weeks, I'm glad to say. So
haven't you been reading The Sun by the pool?
I haven't. I looked at the one in the sky a few times, but that particular avenue of pleasure I decided to close off. I don't know, is Brexit still going ahead?
That's all finished.
Is it done? Are we in or out?
We'll come back to that in October.
Will we? Okay, all right. I don't know, little snippets about Boris and things like that. But, what has been happening is lots of sports stuff, of course. Ah. So the women did really quite well in the football World Cup.
Mm. Didn't like the Americans slightly. You know, sort of references back to sort of colonial times and, you know...
Oh, the tea drinking by Alex
Boston
Morgan.
Yeah, Boston Tea Party and all that kind of... I thought that was a bit kind of unnecessary. I mean, surely a lot of water's gone under the bridge since then, hasn't it? You know, World War II, for example, you know, stuff like that. I thought we were all good mates, but anyway...
Obviously not. All's fair in love and war and football.
A strange thing to bring up.
Mm. But, I mean, it was good. Obviously, we had the Cameroonian debacle with them threatening to walk off the pitch and stuff. That was just horrendous. And but generally, I thought it was really, really good. I thought the women, in many respects, put the men to shame. Mm. So they just get on with it. There's no histrionics. There's no game playing. There's no silly tackles and rolling over. All of which, of course, the men do. So they get a nudge in the chest and they go down holding their eyes and screaming like a girl. And
Let's bring Graham in there, because, Graham, I know you're into your cricket. You're a big sort of Sussex fan, aren't you?
Yes, I am, for my many sins.
Yeah, and do you sit on the board there or something?
I have been an ambassador for Sussex cricket over the years.
Because cricket's a bit like what Brian's just describing with ladies' football. There are no kind of histrionics or anything like that in the game of cricket, are there?
No, you worry sometimes that it creeps into the game or it begins to creep into the game.
Ball tampering?
There was indeed ball tampering with our dear friends, the Australians. Mm. So I think it's when money comes into sport.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the differences with women's football at the moment. Although there is more money in there, there's not the stupid telephone numbers. I mean, Gareth Bale might be going to China for £1 million a week or something. I mean, that is just utterly ridiculous. Mm. No one needs £1 million a week. But give it a try, clearly.
You wouldn't say no, crazy, isn't it?
And rugby kind of... it wasn't really necessarily a good thing for rugby either, I don't think, when the game went professional either. But cricket, World Cup final.
What a game.
Yeah.
I haven't got to watch a lot of cricket over the last couple of seasons, but I managed to...
You were telling me you've got round the garden and done all your chores and therefore you were allowed a bit of time off.
So it looked like I'd been really busy for hours. But now I managed to sit and watch most of it. And, you know, what an amazing game it was, played in the right spirit. New Zealand took their defeat.
Didn't they?
With the right spirit and grace.
I can guarantee you they wouldn't have been doing that back in New Zealand, watching it live.
They were very drunk, though, weren't they? Because it was the middle of the night.
Exactly.
I think they'd had a special dispensation to keep all the bars in New Zealand open until ridiculous o'clock in the morning. So,
did they do the haka before they started the cricket game?
I didn't see them do that.
No. That's a shame. That would have livened it up a bit, wouldn't it? But we won, though, didn't we?
We won. Yeah. And, in fact, it was a Sussex man, we were talking about this earlier, who had to bowl the final over.
Yeah, it's bowled the super over.
Yeah, yeah.
So he really must have immense mental strength. I'm being polite.
Yeah.
Balls of steel.
I think it's probably the right phrase.
But what a great day, because we had that. We had the British Grand Prix on the same day, and, of course, that was Lewis Hamilton, who picked up, I think, his fifth British Grand Prix victory, so that was incredible.
I missed that altogether. I wasn't aware of that.
And we had the Wimbledon men's final as well, Federer Djokovic, and that went to five sets. So all these kind of huge sporting kind of finals went right down to the wire, didn't they, in many ways? So
I mean, it's been a great summer so far, and with women's netball as well, and England getting to the semi-finals of that and coming third.
That was yesterday, wasn't it? And, of course, we had the Open Championship.
I know, and an Irish guy won that, didn't he?
Shane Lowry.
Looking forward to it coming to Kent next year.
Well, exactly. Yes, of course.
I said to my husband, do you want to go to the Golf Open next year? He said, where is it? I was like, what do you mean, where is it?
So will it be sandwiched then?
It is, it's at Royal St George's. Yeah, well remembered. Fantastic.
And did he not shoot a course record as well on the penultimate day? 63, I think.
I think he did, yes. And I think it's the first time the course has been played in this kind of revised format. So I think McIlroy was the previous record holder at 16. He shot a 61 round there, but they've changed it since then, so they've made it a little bit longer. But yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. So
it's all good stuff.
So next year you'll be massively busy at the hotel.
I know. Yeah, it's going to be huge. I mean, I think although there's lots of other when I've worked in Kent when we had the 2001 Open, and again when we had the 2011 Open, obviously in Kent. So I think things have massively changed, obviously within Kent with Airbnbs and obviously hotels and things come along. So, but it's still going to be a busy great, and it's great for Kent and great for Sandwich.
Yeah, and I think the reason the RNA quite like it at Sandwich is because it's very accessible from London. You know, they put on a special, the high-speed train goes through Sandwich. I'm not sure if it does permanently now, but certainly for the last Open, they put a special high-speed on. So you can get to London in just over an hour, which means, of course, you can bring a lot of traffic down for the day, and it's easy for them to get home. But
they're doing some huge works, aren't they, down at Sandwich Railway, where they're obviously building a new platform, et cetera,
right,
so
yeah.
they can obviously gain all the people coming down.
Yes.
You've got your finger on the button, haven't you? Got.
Lynette obviously listened to our show before last when we spoke about that, didn't we? There's the platform extension.
Yes,
absolutely.
And,
I was listening to the show.
Yeah, and of course you've got a golfing husband, which means that...
Well, he's not great, to be honest with you. No. he likes to play golf. That's probably the difference, isn't it, I suppose.
But you have to listen to it. More to the point. Oh, dear. Anyway, so, yeah, so it has been a fabulous sum. All of a sudden it's kicked in, hasn't it? And we had this crescendo of stuff happening all at once, because June was a bit of a write-off. It just rained. And this week we've got a heat wave, and we're on the back of all this kind of sporting euphoria, so long may it continue. But on a kind of business level, what's kind of going on? What's caught your eye on that front?
I have to say not a tremendous amount. There's a couple of things that that tickled me a tad. The biggest story at the moment in Kent is the peasants are revolting, but the residents of Faversham, or a couple of them anyway, are up in arms about Shepherd Neame. There's a horrible stink over... I kid you not. Over Faversham, and apparently it's down to a new water filter system that Shepherd Neame have put in. I mean, I guess as you said off air, brewing beer and it's not the most aromatic of pastimes, is it? But there's a worse than ever smell over Faversham at the moment, which they're not happy about.
Yeah.
So what they can do about it, I don't know. Yeah. Helicopters dusting Old Spice all over the buildings or something, I don't know.
What a thought, gosh.
So that's a bit of a situation.
Well, as long as it doesn't disrupt the supply lines, that's all I'm worried about. We don't want to be running dry over in East Kent, do we?
Yeah, which part of the process are you interested in, Whitey? But I think you've just made that clear.
There's something that's caught my eye, Brian.
Is there?
On a slightly sort of less tongue-in-cheek note. there seems to be a sort of, it's very en vogue at the moment, the kind of the whole subject of creativity and fostering creative businesses.
Creative hub,
exactly. Mm. That's a word that's used a lot. And I think it started, and Graham, you can kind of back me up on this or kind of add some colour. I think it started in Folkestone some years ago. Mm. Folkestone was identified as an area where perhaps it had a sort of an area of rich cultural heritage where they felt, and I think Margate as well was another good example, where they felt it would be appropriate to kind of create a kind of a central creative business hub, if you like. So whether that be kind of digital businesses or kind of design type businesses, or obviously we've got the Turner Contemporary over in Margate as well. I think that kind of fell under that umbrella. And I think Ramsgate is the latest sort of coastal town, and they seem to be focused around coastal towns, these initiatives where, the idea is to create another creative hub. So did it all start over sort of your neck of the woods, Graham?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I'm aware that Folkestone had a creative quarter a number of years ago.
Mm.
And certainly looking at East Sussex, you've got the Towner Gallery in Eastbourne, you've got the De La Warr in Bexhill, you've got what was formerly known as the Gerwood Gallery, the Hastings Contemporary in Hastings as well. And you do see that there's a creative strip along the coast. I wonder, you know, whether that's because creative folk like the sun, you know, they like places that are perhaps a bit off the beaten path, and all these places are at the end of the line.
Yeah.
So there are things that are connecting them together.
Yeah.
And certainly I know from an East Sussex perspective, you know, the local galleries are getting and working a lot closer together to try to develop something that's coherent to bring people down from London.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether that's to just visit the galleries or to stay a bit longer term or even to encourage people to move down to the coast. And we see a lot of that, particularly in Hastings, where you get down from Londoners, DFLs, as they're lovingly called, moving down and bringing investment into the town, which has been really important. And I think that's probably the same in Kent as well, and to perhaps a lesser extent in Essex, where a lot of coastal towns are slightly more deprived. And it's something that can be seen as being unique to those areas.
Yeah.
And I think that's really where the focus has come from.
But I like that word coherent, coherent strategy to kind of to maximise that.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have places important. That are really cultural.
Yes.
I don't think just because a town's on the coast you can say, they've had someone live here for 5 minutes, or we can be a cultural attraction there.
Yes.
You have actually got to have something, you know, more tangible, like a Turner Gallery or whatever it might be.
Yes, and but something of its moment now, as opposed to playing on, you know, something historic, perhaps.
Yeah. History can take you so far.
A certain person.
Something tangible that people can go and visit or engage with.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the key.
Yeah.
And if they can find that in Ramsgate, fantastic.
Yes.
But, you know, that's someone else is going to have to tell me what it is.
Yeah, but
I agree. Living there doesn't do it for me.
Or the guy, you know, the chap who only had one ear after he left. you know.
Thank God.
You're right. It's a little bit tenuous, isn't it, to play those strings, I think.
Yeah.
But, it's interesting because, obviously, this sort of comes on the back of Manston. I'm sure you saw in the news that Manston is now going to revert back to a proper working airport, and the idea is obviously to run not just freight in the short term, but in the medium term, you know, resume passenger flights as well. And I think, you know, that for me, the problem with East Kent has always been an infrastructure problem. I mean, I live down, you know, in deepest, darkest East Kent, and I have to drive half an hour, you know, just to get to Faversham. And for many people, Faversham is deepest, darkest East Kent already.
Mm.
So, you know, for me to get to Ashford, for example, takes an hour, you know, to get to the studio. But, of course, at the weekend, it comes into its own because, you know, we've got beautiful countryside, we've got beautiful beaches, you know, we've got all of those things going for us. But I think the thing that stopped people moving down and, you know, businesses in particular, and it's a bit of a catch-22, isn't it? Because without the businesses, you don't get the, you know, the kind of the skilled labour. But you don't get the skilled labour moving down or kind of growing organically, locally, necessarily, without the businesses either.
Mm.
So, and I think infrastructure, for me, sits at the heart of all of that.
Yeah, I mean, infrastructure is one of the key pillars to productivity. And, you know, that's the phrase of the moment.
Mm.
And I think if government wants everywhere in the country to benefit, they do need to look at their coastal communities because they are the ones that really do lack proper infrastructure.
Mm. Because, you know, we're out on
road
a limb.
Or rail. Yeah, absolutely. And we're the end of the line.
Yeah.
So immediately demand is less. So it's a harder sort of political economic sell, if you like.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. It very much should be done.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the key things around our coastal towns. You know, most of them suffer with levels of deprivation higher than further inside the county. That's the same in Kent, it's the same in Essex, it's the same in East Sussex as well. They all suffer the same challenge.
Yes.
So it's not rocket science to see that either you need to have a good infrastructure in terms of road and rail, or you need really good top-notch broadband infrastructure, which would also increase your creative businesses' interest in the area as well, because that's what they need. They need to be able to upload and download files quickly. So, you know, if you can't afford a new railway, which I appreciate costs a few quid, then high-speed infrastructure through broadband is the next important thing.
So I like the idea of you know, Ramsgate being a new creative hub, But I think I'd like to see some kind of public money spent on some big infrastructure projects as well. I mean, the M2, frankly, is a joke. I mean, it's not even a functioning dual carriageway, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
the M20, Brian, while you were away, and this would have had you turning on your sunbed, was voted the worst motorway in the country.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, it certainly is at the moment. And coming down here today from Maidstone, it just seemed worse to me. There's three or four different speed limits at different times. To get off of the junction at junction 10 now is still a mess. But it's interesting what Graham was saying earlier about and also skilled labour coming down, and there's not as much there. I guess it is, or at least should be, all relative, because then to set up businesses and stuff like that in Ramsgate and other places should be a damn sight cheaper than setting up in Maidstone, for instance. So you know, rent and rates should be cheaper, and wages would be
office
would
space
be lower.
Availability
absolutely that. But yeah, the thing is that your journey here today, because we've got the M2 and the M20, that's again all heading up, isn't it? Basically, there's nothing going around. So, you know, if you go down into, I don't know, Hampshire, and you've got that M27 bit along the bottom that links kind of Southampton, Bournemouth. All right,
to the West Country.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't go on forever.
No.
But there's nothing around the edge down here, is there? So if you want to get to, I don't know, from Rye round to Margate, I don't even know
how really
you
good
would
point,
do that.
Actually, you know, why haven't we got a southern M25 that can kind of link?
I've been doing my job
why
now.
Why not, Graham? It's
entirely my fault. I've been doing this job for, I don't look old enough, but 18 years I've been doing this job. The first year I was with Let's Do Business Group, there was something called the South Coast Multimodal Study that was undertaken, which was how they were going to improve the road network from Honiton to Dover. How much of that do you think has been done in that?
Honiton?
Yeah.
Where's that?
Not the West Devon Honiton.
Devon
Honiton. Okay.
Because I can tell you how much of it has been done between sort of East Sussex and Kent.
Yeah.
And that's none.
Well, precisely. And the West Country, I mean, you've really still only got the A303, haven't you? You know, everybody has to drive past Stonehenge to get down to the West Country.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reality of, unless you go M5.
Yeah.
You know, M4, M5.
Well, I mean, which you have to, because if you're in somewhere like, I don't know, the busier Sussex places, taking Brighton out of it, but looking at, I don't know, industrial hubs like Crawley or Horsham, and if you want to get to kind of Maidstone or Ashford, basically you've got to go up to come down again, haven't you? You've got to go up, it's all around the M25.
But
there's nothing going across, unless you want to be absolutely insane and try and go through Tunbridge Wells, which surely nobody in their right mind would ever do.
Right. I'm not sure I could even find it without a sat nav. But I think, you know, we've got to take vehicles off the road. So going back to what you were saying about, you know, infrastructure in a kind of technological sense, you know, high speed broadband, you know, we should be encouraging employers to think about how their workforce can actually be home based.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing more and more of that. And I know there's an organisation in Kent that are looking at rurally based sort of co-working spaces. And I think that is going to become more the way that businesses operate, and particularly in terms of people that work up in the city. Do they need to work up there all the time? Well, of course they don't. No. They could work from home perhaps.
And that M2 is just, I mean, Brian runs his networking in Dartford this week, and I'll be travelling up there at 6 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. And I know from Faversham onwards, it will be nose to tail. You know, and you think, well, where are all these people going? Well, they're just going to work. And you think, what, at 6 o'clock in the morning? What time are they, you know, they'd be at their desk at 7? Everybody's
or not, because if they're going further, it's going to be two and a half hours, perhaps.
Exactly. So everybody's caught in that bottleneck of trying to get somewhere by a certain time.
Well, in fact, I avoid the M2 like the plague, especially going to Dartford, because I'll just hop on the M20 and nip round because it's early enough. However, I've got to look into it a little further, but I'm thinking the M20 is shut. on Thursday until 6:30 in the morning or something, past Junction 6. So I'm going to have to go up and along the M2. Yeah. So it'll be even worse this week.
Well, don't tell everybody it's shut, eh? Because then at least you can just go while everyone else is stuck on the M20.
Yeah, if I tell him it's shut, maybe I'll be the only one on it, and that will help.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's another project, you know, as well as kind of high-speed internet. And as you say, maybe having co-working kind of hubs where businesses can, you know, if businesses need to kind of see their employees, then, you know, facilitate it that way rather than having one big head office.
FaceTime.
Perhaps, which is a great way to do it. But also, you know, in East Kent, we need proper rail infrastructure. Mm. I mean, you know, look what the high-speed link is doing for Ashford. And the kind of, you know, the ongoing development of the metropolis that will eventually be Ashford. And why can't we, you know, we need to extend that down to Thanet, for example, so people can get to London in an hour.
Mm.
It's a lot better than it was, but, you know, the stretch between Ramsgate and Canterbury is still the old line.
And the interesting thing would be what happens with High Speed 2. Because if that gets canned by the government, of course, they have a good opportunity with the new Prime Minister to do just that. Although I'm sure they'll invest heavily in the north, they might also have some funds available to invest in the south in infrastructure projects that don't cost $200 billion or have much.
But if you're building an airport and, you know, and or reopening an airport as they're doing with Manston, you've got to enable people to get there, haven't you, quickly? And, you know, an hour or less than an hour from London would just bring those people in, wouldn't it, as an alternative to a Stansted or a Gatwick or a Heathrow.
Yeah, it's got to be under an hour.
Yeah, it has to be. That's the critical number. And we used to be able to do it. I mean, we were talking about the kind of the cultural heritage, you know, back in the day of some of these seaside towns. Well, back in the steam train days, they used to be able to do it in 57 minutes. You know, and there was actually a station in Ramsgate down on the beach where the steam trains would arrive at. In 57
Bring back
minutes.
Steam trains then, that's well, what I see.
Trains were quicker by steam from Hastings to London than they are now.
Yeah.
And they're more reliable.
Well, and they call it progress.
Absolutely. You've got a particularly bad operator, haven't you, in Sussex, that's always in the news for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, we're lucky. So, we've got both South Eastern and Southern.
Yes, Southern.
Oh, everyone's a winner.
Yeah. Anyway, all of that is fascinating, and we are looking forward to all these exciting developments. What we need to do now, I think, is play a bit of tunage, which will introduce Graham a bit more formally into the proceedings, so that we can have a bit of a more detailed chat about.
And we can play Guess the Link.
Let's Do Business Group. Exactly.
Best bit of the show, I say.
So we're going to play some tunage, and then we'll be back shortly.
Sure do me good, do you good, let me help. It's a fact that people get lonely, it ain't nothing new, but a woman like you, baby, should never have the blues. Let me help, have a laugh on me, I can help. It would sure do me good, do you good, let me help. When I go to sleep at night, you're always a part of my dream. Holding me tight, telling me everything I wanna hear. So don't forget me, baby. All you gotta do is call. You know how I feel about you. I can do anything at all. Let me help. If your child sure do me good, do you good, let me help. Let me help, baby. When I go to sleep at night, you're always a part of my dreams. your child needs a daddy, let me help. It would sure do me good, do you good, let me help.
Sorry to cut you short there, Elvis, but we have got a show to run here. Brian, do you want to help us out with that one, my friend?
Ah, well, that was If I Can Help by, as you quite rightly said, Elvis, although the more famous version was by a guy called Billy Swan.
Billy Swan.
He had the bigger hit with it.
Ah, there you go. Elvis's biggest hit, that one.
Certainly not, no. It's certainly not up there with Blue Suede Shoes or Jailhouse Rock.
No, that's what he's better known for. Anyway, that brings us nicely on to our first guest today.
Is there someone here who can help?
I think there might be. Graham Marley from Let's Do Business Group. Graham, welcome again.
Thank you.
I Can Help. I guess that's kind of your mantra in many ways, isn't it, at Let's Do Business Group? Tell us who you are for those of us who don't know Let's Do Business Group, because you're actually Sussex-based, but you do a lot of work in Kent. So.
Yeah, we do. The Let's Do Business Group is a social enterprise, so it's a not-for-profit organisation. We've been going... We've had different guises over the years for over 25 years, and we've been Let's Do Business Group for the last five of those. And as you say, a lot of what we do is in East Sussex, but over the last 5-6 years, we've been developing our services to help businesses start up, survive and grow across Kent and now into Essex as well.
So your business, as it were, is business support?
It is, yeah.
That's what you do?
Yeah, it's very much. And it's very much whether you're someone who's got a bit of an idea, thinking about starting up in business, or you've been trading for 20, 30 years, mm-hmm. But perhaps you've got stuck with something, don't know where to turn, then we can help.
Right. Okay.
Very apt.
Yeah. Mm. Well done. Well done with the link there.
Yeah, we pride ourselves on our linkage and tunage.
And our well-briefed guests. Fantastic. So that covers an awful lot of ground, doesn't it? So, I mean, let's start with startups, because I know you have the contract for the Startup Loans Programme in the South East, for example.
Yes, we do. We've been involved with the Startup Loan Company ever since it started, which was 3 or 4 years ago now. It was put together, an idea. David Cameron claimed credit for it. I'm sure it wasn't him, but he claimed credit for it. And the programme was set up with James Kahn, the entrepreneur and former Dragon, and Lord Young, who was a former minister in government.
Yeah.
And really, I think it was Lord Young's idea. He likes to recycle ideas, and he'd had this a number of years previously. But the opportunity came up to launch it with some sensible funding.
Mm.
So the Startup Loan Company sort of coordinates the scheme and has a range of delivery partners across the country. Let's Do Business Group is the delivery partner for the South East.
Right, and that's channeled through a vehicle called, is it the British Business Bank?
Is
that ultimately the kind of where the funds are held?
Yeah, it is now. I mean, it's changed over the sort of length of the programme, but yes, it is a British Business Bank programme.
And of course, Vince Cable, I think, has been quite involved with the British Business Bank in the past, hasn't he?
So, yeah, he was the Minister of State. I think he was probably in charge when it was established in the first place.
So it's completely non-political then. That's the important thing.
Yeah,
it's there to help businesses start up. And, I mean, I've obviously got direct experience of it myself, having worked with you guys as a kind of consultant on the Startup Loans Programme. What do you think are the kind of the key, where's the key value in the Startup Loans Programme from your point of view, apart from the fact that you give people money or you lend people money? Where's the real value?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's value in a number of areas. I mean, the lending of the money is the main thing. I mean, that's what people are really looking for, to help them, you know, get their business started. But we also help them with their business plan to make sure that it's viable.
Mm.
We don't want to be lending money to people where the business is going to fall over quickly. So we can provide advice and support with the business plan. Once they've got the loan, we can also provide them with ongoing mentoring support as well during the first year of the business, which is also really important.
Mm.
But the main thing, I think, is really helping people to access that finance, which...
Yes.
you know, the traditional banks aren't doing now for startup businesses and haven't been really since the banking crash.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because your background is in banking.
It is indeed.
And I think, you know, from the kind of traditional bank lending criteria is, have you borrowed money from us before? No. Well, then we can't lend you any money.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of that. I mean, it's, you know, banking is now, you know, for micro businesses and SMEs, it's a computer says yes or no approach. And although there is a little bit of that within the startup loan mechanism, it's much more around getting a feel for the entrepreneur and their business plan.
Right.
And we spend a lot of time doing that and getting an understanding of the business and the model.
Because that, for me, was the key when I was involved with it. You know, being able to sit down with a business, a potential new business owner who had no experience in business whatsoever, and actually help them create a bona fide, credible business plan, which ultimately you need to see before you decide whether or not you're going to lend them any money. So that, for me, was the crux of this. You know, so many people go into business thinking, I'm going to start a business. And, you know, they might be a very skilled tradesperson, and that might get them so far, for example. But ultimately, you need to understand, if you're going to lend somebody money, that they're going to be able to balance the books on a kind of cash flow basis on a monthly.
The plan is so important. I mean, that is the most important thing, I think, of any business, you know, whether you're a startup or established.
The business plan, you mean? Mm. So the way they present that to you, or
it's not the way that it's presented, it's more the fact that they've thought about it and they've got a plan. Because a lot of people will just go with a wing and a prayer and, oh, it'll be all right. Well, generally speaking, it won't be, because something will happen that you won't have foreseen. So I know it sounds really dull and boring, but, you know, business plans are absolutely critical. Some of it is, you know, a lot of people who are starting a business will either understand marketing or they understand finance. If you're lucky, they understand both. If you're unlucky, they won't understand either. They just have a good product.
Yes, and, or they're very good at what they do.
Yeah, and they need a lot of help to make sure that they don't trip over, because the people that don't have an understanding of marketing or finance are generally doing it on a bit of a wing and a prayer. And that's where business failures occur more often than not.
So, for example, within the template, the business plan template that you provide people, there is a whole chunk that talks about market research.
Yeah.
And that's very much at the core of the marketing element of the plan, as it were, isn't it? In terms of, you know, what research have you done in the marketplace?
And that's so important, because you've got to have an understanding of whether your product is actually something someone's going to buy.
Yeah.
You've also got to have an understanding of who else is trying to sell that product into the marketplace. Because without doing that, you won't know how much you can sell your product for.
Yeah.
Because you could be selling it for 10%, 20% more because no one else is selling what you're doing.
Yeah. Because the repayment of the loan kicks in fairly quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, usually after the first month.
Right. So, you know, that's not long to start generating a sales pipeline, is it?
No. You do need to be pretty much ready to
hit the ground running.
You could build a little bit of wriggle room into it in terms of perhaps borrow an extra thousand or a couple of thousand to cover your own costs for that first couple of month period. But you do, the nature of the startup loan is that you do need to be ready to go.
Brilliant. So it's a fantastic program, and you guys are the delivery partner in the Southeast. So if anybody out there is thinking about starting a new business and they need a bit of an initial capital injection, what's the kind of interest rate on that at the moment?
So the interest rate is 6%,
right?
And an individual can borrow up to £25,000 over a maximum 5-year term. Typically, the loans are around £10,000, but it's very much based on business need. And, you know,
and it's much simpler, isn't it, if a business indeed is borrowing just below that £10,000 threshold, because you have some autonomy in terms of decision making.
Yeah, it does make life a little bit easier, but it is really very much driven by what the needs are of the business. Our advisors are very skilled in sort of talking to businesses about what they need, why they need it, and making sure they borrow what's appropriate for their for their business.
Now, we should also say at this point that you do have a very capable advisor on the ground in Kent, based at the Terrace, in Roger Keach.
Yeah,
love Roger.
Who we all know very well.
Yeah, so if you've been to a networking event in Kent. You've probably bumped into
and
Roger
haven't
at some
bumped
point.
Into Roger.
Does he ever do any networking, Roger?
Yeah, he does a little bit. Yeah, yeah. So yes, Roger's our man on the ground.
Right.
So he will meet with clients, talk to them about their business plans. You know, whether it's in Maidstone or elsewhere in Kent, he does travel around. He gets about a bit.
Yeah, so he can either come to you or you can drop in and see him at the terrace. Yeah. So which is
works,
great.
You know, works really well.
Yeah,
and we've got some really nice examples of. You know, startup loan clients that we've helped. So there's a nice one in Kent, Ben and Sophie Crittenden, who we helped set up a restaurant in Broadstairs.
Oh, right. What's
called
that?
Stark.
Stark, okay.
It's a tiny little 10-cover restaurant in Oscar Road, and they've now been trading 2.5 years.
Right.
But they've been, you know, very successful. It's high-end food, so they have a tasting menu, which is £60.
Mm.
But... Ben, before he came to us, had been on MasterChef. He'd been trained by a Michelin-star chef in Kent as well. And, you know, what they do is really good. And interestingly, they recently came back to us and said, well, it's going so well, we're full all the time. We want to open another restaurant, which will also be in Broadstairs, and that opens in mid-September.
Wow.
So they have two restaurants.
Fabulous.
Along the same road, catering to slightly different markets and tastes.
Mm-hmm.
But we helped them second time around because they've been going as long as they have. They didn't qualify for a startup loan. We've helped them through our own loan finance businesses as well, which is great for them. They couldn't get the finance from the bank because they wanted a bit more than the banks were able to offer unsecured, which again is not a surprise in the current market.
Mm.
But they've got a great track record with us. We like the idea, we like the concept and what they're trying to do. They've proven the model works, so we were able to lend to them through our Let's Do Business Finance scheme.
Right, so that's your own brokerage that you have?
That one's our own loan finance.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a number of things. We do the startup loans, we have our own loan finance for businesses that can't get bank finance, and then we also have a brokerage offer, which is a lot wider. That's really around working with a business to identify what their funding needs are,
right,
and then trying to match a lender with the business. So that would be us working with a third party.
Yes, got it.
So we can offer that sort of across a whole range and a whole size of businesses.
So when it comes to your own financing of businesses, what's the maximum there that you'll go up to?
So we'll end up to 50,000 through that scheme. The interest rate is higher because it's higher risk lending, because it's things that the banks won't do. So typically it's 14 or 15%, but it's still lower than, you know, typical credit cards, many personal loans, or sometimes people like Funding Circle, Iowaka, they tend to be higher interest rates as well. But again,
and the brokerage, you'll go into, it could be a crowdfunding kind of scenario, for example, where you can advise clients on how to set up a crowdfunding campaign.
Yeah, it could be that, or it could be looking at things like invoice finance and factoring, trying to release monies through businesses' debtor books. You know, that's somewhere we've had quite a lot of interest recently. Again, you know, banks are finding it difficult to lend against lacks of security, and quite often using a debtor book. You know, if you're a factory selling goods, then that can be a really good way of releasing some of your cash flow.
Yeah, I'd like to see you talking about that a bit more in Kent, to be honest with you, Graham. I think you're a little bit, maybe not in East Sussex, but I think in Kent you're perhaps a little bit under the radar in terms of your kind of broader financing proposition there. Because I think in many ways, you know, the bank shouldn't be the first port of call because it is such a competitive marketplace today, and there are so many different options available outside of the traditional, you know, borrowing route.
It is a bit of a minefield, and we're fortunate that we've got two advisors that have worked in the finance industry, man and boy, across different sorts of finance, you know, both bank, invoice finance, etc. We've got people that are expert within the organisation are accessing grants where they're available.
Right.
And, you know, there's not a lot out there at the moment, but it's a wheel that turns, and there will be at some point, particularly if recession hits and when Brexit hits. Yes.
Well, let's move on to talk about some of that, because you've just finished a grant-funded programme called Her Biz in Kent. I think you were running that out of the terrace in Maidstone. So tell us how that works.
So Herbie is a programme to help new female entrepreneurs. So it's a programme for startups funded in part by NatWest. And we're running five cohorts, two in Hastings, one in Maidstone, one in Folkestone that will be in September, and one in Margate in October.
Brilliant. That's that coastal focus again that we come back to, isn't it?
It is, that was something that NatWest were particularly keen on supporting entrepreneurs in those areas. Mm-hmm. And we're also working with the Kent and Medway Growth Hub as well, who are supporting two of the Kent cohorts. So it's a programme of three workshops and some mentoring support. And at the end of the programme, there's a £1,000 prize for the person who's got the best business plan that's most likely to succeed.
That's for cash prize.
Yeah, as well. Mm-hmm. They also, all of the candidates can also find out about the NatWest programme that links to crowdfunding. So NatWest have got crowdfunding schemes, so participants can upload their business idea and they can get match funding from NatWest up to a maximum of £5,000 as well. Mm-hmm. And again, that can be accessed through the Herbis programme or direct through Let's Do Business Group as well.
They will help people set up a crowdfunding campaign through their platform. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah, so it's through the crowdfunder platform, but it's done specifically under this NatWest Scale Back Her Business. So really neat idea.
Yeah.
And it is all around trying to inspire female entrepreneurs.
Yes, because, I mean, I don't know what the... you know, what the average kind of startup sum of money needed is today. But I'd imagine it's quite modest, isn't it? If you're, let's say you are a trade
person. Depends on the business, I would have thought.
You know, if you need tools and a van, you know, how much do you actually, is it, it's, you know, probably no more than £5,000.
Now, from a startup loan point of view, the average is around 10.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. So that's, I mean, it's not insignificant, is it? It's still quite a big commitment.
But I know, as you say, it really does depend on, you know, the business and the individual's background. Mm. A lot of people do still start their business with their own money or friends, parents, relatives and the like. Mm-hmm. That might not always be the best place to go. Sometimes, you know, for the sake of paying a few percent on interest, you're probably better not having the hassle and the stress hanging over you. Having to repay parents and friends. So I'd always encourage people starting a business to look at different options. But, you know, crowdfunding, that is a really interesting way that more and more startups are using, particularly if they've got a product that can sell. Yeah. I saw one on the NatWest website earlier today, which was sort of a gin gifting pack.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And if you invest in this business at the early stage... Yeah. I think for something like £120.
I've seen that one.
You can get a box of gin for, I think it was for 6 months or something like that, which sounded quite
And that's
quite tasty.
How a lot of these crowdfunding campaigns work, isn't it?
You know, give us something good to offer.
Give us your support and we'll give you some free product.
Yeah. Mm. So it works for everyone. For everyone. Yeah. It's not,
And that's why it's about... you know, talking to the masses rather than talking to one big investor, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, what you really want, it's a bit like raising money for charity. I mean, you've just done a huge walk recently and it's about...
55K.
Yeah. It's about lots of small donations rather than one big one, perhaps. Yeah. That's crowdfunding.
Yeah, I mean, we've worked with people that have had investors in the past. We've had one of the businesses that we work with had Dragon Investment. Mm-hmm. In fact, we had a couple that had Dragon Investment. Mm. And, you know, it worked for them. The business is doing really well. They can't get rid of the dragons, though. They can't pay them off because the business is worth too much.
This isn't reggae sauce, is it?
No, it's not. I can't claim fame for that one.
Oh, okay, because I know he was being paraded by the Chamber at one point. He was at all their events, so I don't know if
But that is a really interesting story there. You know, Peter Jones is still invested in reggae sauce.
Yeah.
And they're both really happy. It's worked really well for both of them because he opened doors that would never have been opened otherwise.
Yeah, and I think as a business owner, that's the key, really, isn't it? You've got to be pragmatic about these things and say, okay, well, I don't have any control over my business anymore, but so what? You know, I've got 10 million quid in the bank and it's still my face on the label.
Yeah. So 40 or 50% of a huge business is much better than 100% of not much of a business. Yeah.
So we'll keep a lookout for Herbiz coming to Folkestone and Margate later on in the year. What else are you involved with? I know you've been involved with Southeast Business Boost this year.
Yes, we have.
Now, my sort of frustration with a lot of these publicly funded grant programs. And I think what we should do maybe is just introduce what the South East Local Enterprise Partnership is quickly as a vehicle for, you know, disseminating some of these monies that come down from central government and how that all works. Because I think the biggest frustration a lot of small business owners have is they don't even know these programs exist because there's no money to advertise them. And they've gone before they even get to hear about them. So just how does it all work from a kind of a trickle-down effect, and, you know, how does that side of things function or not?
It's quite a difficult question.
It's
a number of questions because the South East Local Enterprise Partnership, I would imagine a lot of your listeners haven't heard of.
No, exactly.
And probably don't need to in many respects. But CELEP, as it's lovingly known, covers Essex, Kent and East Sussex. And it's really the vehicle that government uses to disperse government funding.
Right.
And a lot of the funding that it has had since it started has been transport related. And there's a number of schemes that across all three counties that have been invested in. And the other thing that they've spent a lot of money on is property related.
Mm-hmm.
So things like innovation centres and enterprise zones have had funding through the Local Enterprise Partnership. One of the smaller things it has done is around business support.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the South East Business Boost Programme, which is a European-funded programme of business support that covers the whole of the South East Local Enterprise Partnership area. And we've been involved in delivering that support in East Sussex, and we've worked with the Kent and Medway Growth Hub to deliver some of the contract in Kent as well. And it was a mixture of business support and a grant programme.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, it is very difficult to make sure that grant funding gets to the businesses that actually need it because it's always available to anyone. And quite often you can find that people that don't particularly need the money will apply, and because them's the rules, they'll access it.
Mm-hmm.
I am probably a bit of a heretic. I don't like grant funds.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked through and supported delivery of a number over the years. And in my view, loan finance is a better way to disseminate these sorts of funds.
Mm-hmm.
I think they provide better value for money because you can recycle them.
Mm-hmm.
So
we had a big programme. It was called the Regional Growth Fund,
which I think
was 35 million quid in Kent 5-6 years ago.
Yep. And that's still being recycled.
And that's being recycled continuously because it is a loan fund rather than a grant.
Yeah. And to my mind, that just shows better value for money.
Yeah.
And interestingly, you know, when the programmes were originally discussed, parts of government were saying it's a lot harder to manage a loan programme than a grant programme. Mm. They're very keen to disperse the funds by way of grant, and took some persuading to actually do it by loan instead. But it's so much better. Even if you're charging very low rates of interest, it's still worth doing from a business perspective.
Yeah, okay. So in terms of kind of what business owners can do to keep their kind of finger on the pulse, as it were, in terms of all these initiatives, and what would your kind of advice be in terms of, is there a central reference point that we should be, you know, using, accessing on a fairly regular basis?
Yeah, the first port of call would really be the Growth Hub.
Right.
Because the Growth Hub is the way that businesses can ask any questions that they like about business, whether it's around finance or marketing or whatever.
So that's another South East Local Enterprise Partnership initiative, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's a Growth Hub in each of the three counties, and we all work collaboratively, in effect, across the whole of the Local Enterprise Partnership patch. But really, that's the...
And on a physical level, that's a website, isn't it, in the first instance?
Yeah. They also have business navigators who are there sort of online and offline to talk to businesses about their needs and what it is that they actually need and want.
Mm-hmm.
And that service will continue to develop over the course of the next 6 months or so as well.
So that should have all the latest information.
Yeah.
If I want to come to you directly, to get a kind of a recommendation, to kind of bounce ideas, how do we get in touch with Let's Do Business Group?
So you can either go through our website or you can contact info@ldbgroup.co.uk. You can call us or you can make contact with Roger, who we were talking about at Maidstone.
That would be the easiest route, wouldn't it?
Or if you bump into him at a networking event, you'll know him. He'd be smiling.
Yes. Okay.
But so phone, email, yeah. or face-to-face with Roger if you're in the Maidstone area.
Perfect. Graham, we've kind of run out of time. We didn't even get onto your exhibitions because I know you have your own exhibition program as well. We'll do that next time.
Thank you.
But for now, thank you so much for coming, and hopefully that's given prospective business owners, existing business owners, some ideas about who they can turn to for help and where they can get good advice. So.
Yeah, no, we're always happy to help.
That's brilliant. Superb.
I can help. Indeed.
We're not going to play it again. We've done that. We've played again.
Nicely wrapped up. Yeah. There.
What we are going to do is we are going to play a little bit more tunage by way of an introduction to our next guest, Lynette. And we will see when we come back after the break. It's quite a long one, this one, so we may not
Can
play
be.
All no. unless some of us need to go for
You
a
might have to
break.
Do your DJ fading out a bit,
exactly.
Whitey.
All right, so let's crack on anyway.
Which is great, because anything can happen and probably will, so...
What a fabulous song that is. Timeless, isn't it?
Nicely faded, Whitey.
Did you like
Nicely
that?
Nicely faded.
I'm getting quite good on the old controls,
yeah,
aren't I? For
yeah.
an old boy.
Yeah. That was almost professional. So do you know what that was then?
Well, I know the name of the song, but what's the linkage?
Mm. And would you know when it was launched?
Oh, gosh, is it early 70s, 74?
Close. 1977.
Oh, 77.
Yeah.
Before I was born.
Yeah, no. Exactly. So, yeah, but that was, of course, Hotel California by the Eagles. Undoubtedly their biggest and best hit. And what's the link? Well, it's Hotel.
California.
Nothing to do with California. Oh. The link is Hotel. Because we do have our next guest, which is Lynette Wood. From the Ashford International Hotel.
Lynette, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Just unfortunately, the hotel's not in California, it is in Ashford.
No, but well, with all this hot weather.
No difference,
having,
is there, California
absolutely
to Ashford?
Absolutely not.
We could be in California, couldn't we
could
today?
Be, yeah. Not in this air conditioned here, but outside it's nice and
outside,
sunny, isn't
it? It's gorgeous. Yeah. It's going to get hotter. So, Lynette, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us all about the wonderful things that you do at the Ashford International Hotel, because there's a business side to what you do. There's a kind of, you've got a leisure club, you've got a spa facility. I mean, it kind of touches so many different points, doesn't it? So, well, we've got long enough to talk about all of it. So, so tell us what's going on. What's happening at the Ashford International at the moment?
So, obviously, the Ashford International is situated just opposite Simone Well Avenue, just off of Junction 9. It's got 179 bedrooms and four leisure facilities, including a 20-metre swimming pool. We had a big discussion about that last time, didn't we, when I was on the show. And conference and meetings facilities, really, where we can do conferences up to 400 there. So that's really the background of what we do. But obviously, in terms of what the hotel can do, in terms of we do comedy nights and conferences, spa breaks. Spa's huge, really, at the Ashford International. And we're really trying to build that local business that right. we do spa at the hotel. Mm. We've just launched, we're opening now late Thursday evenings for sort of those, you know, the treatments where you just have your nails done. You obviously know, Martin, because you like your
yes.
all the time.
You mean the old...
He's never out of the place.
The manicure, you
the
mean.
Manicure, the manicure, pedicure, you know, bit of waxing, those type of treatments. So they're open now until 8 o'clock on a Thursday.
Don't go down that route. Don't.
I was shocked by my golfing buddies at the weekend. And we got talking feet for some reason because, you know, hot weather plays havoc with a golfer's feet. And
pedicure.
Who knew?
And we started talking. We got onto the subject of pedicures. And my two buddies said to me, oh, have you not had a pedicure? You must go for a pedicure. I said, what? I said, well, what do they actually do? And I won't go into the gory details, but it's obviously something that you offer at the hotel as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, we do, yeah. And we obviously have great in terms of overnight spa breaks and we're super busy at weekends, but we're just trying to build that midweek business too.
Now, I saw an offer on social media that you're running for your spa at the moment. Was it 2 for 1?
No, 2 for £114.
2 for £114. So that's two people.
For £114. And I can't remember the offer off by heart, unfortunately, but it does include a free gift.
Right. A full day, use of all the facilities, yep. a treatment, I believe, yep. as well. Probably lunch if you're going to be there all day.
Yeah.
So pretty incredible offer, really,
not
isn't
bad
it?
At all. Mm. So only available Monday to Thursday.
Monday to Thursday. That's why. So it's off peak. Mm. Okay, right. So a lovely present for someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe not Mother's Day because that's gone, but yeah.
Next Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Am I right in saying, are you the largest hotel in Kent?
We're the largest hotel in Kent in terms of bedrooms wise. So in terms of facilities, obviously there are other hotels similar, but obviously we can do the bedrooms wise. And why we're so great is that actually we can do a conference and offer 100 bedrooms at the same time or 120 bedrooms where no other hotel can do that really in Kent.
Mm.
It's interesting, that's a good point, because when you go to the Ashford International, you've got that beautiful sort of central atrium and it's all very, it's beautifully lit and it just feels, it's warm and it's cosy. You've got those lovely sofas and chairs there. You would never have any idea that it was such a big hotel, would you? It feels quite intimate.
Yeah, no, I think because obviously we're really lucky that our banqueting space and our meeting space is very separate to the hotel, obviously, in terms of the bedrooms. So anything that's going on, if you're having a conference or an exhibition or anything like that, you're very much down on your own in terms of, and obviously there's a separate entrance and that's great. So if you are having a smaller meeting, like a one-to-one meeting in the atrium area, as you'd say, you're not necessarily affected by everything else that's going on. And also in terms of if you've got events going on at the weekends with music, etc., that's also not affecting anybody in the bedrooms because it's completely completely separate area. I mean, it's a purpose-built hotel. Mm-hmm. We think it's nearly 30 years old. We're not 100% sure on that. That's something we need to look into. But it obviously is purposely built in terms of what it offers, and it is great. It's a great space.
It's wonderful. Right.
Yeah, you actually run quite a lot of exhibitions and kind of conferences and things like that there. Now, I've been to quite a few sort of kind of mini one-day exhibitions and things. Is that still the case?
Yeah, absolutely. We're definitely open to exhibitions and things, and we have lots of things going on. So, you know, we're a great location as well in terms of Ashford. I think you are quite central in terms of that horrible M20 and horrible M2 that you were chatting about there. So I think we are a great location. So it's definitely is a good space for
exhibitions. It is very easy to get
and also
to, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really easy to get to. And there's no pillars in the way. You know, it is an open space and it can sort of be used for anything, really.
The Chamber have always run their B2Bs there, I think. I mean, I don't think they're running any this year.
They're not running any this year at all.
Certainly in the past, I know they've used it. Now, let's talk about what's happening this Friday, if we can, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are perhaps they leave it to the last minute to think, oh, what should we do on Friday? We'll go out and... What's happening on Friday? Because I know you host something every month, don't you?
Yeah, last Friday of every month, we host a comedy evening at the hotel. So the obviously comedy, it's normally three comedians and followed with a two-course meal and a disco as well. So it's and it's £28 per person, which I think is an absolute bargain for an evening out.
So whether you're sort of maybe a couple and you've alternative night out, you and me, Brian... wink, wink, or...
is that some kind of joke?
Yeah, absolutely.
Comedy night, another link. I'll throw that one in for free.
You two aren't on stage, are you?
First stage out of here, Graham, I think.
Or I know a lot of businesses like it because they use it as a sort of team night out, don't they?
I think we are really lucky. It's a great evening out just for a couple if you wanted to, or, you know, there's a friend's or a birthday. You know, we have a couple of hen do's or stag do's as well that maybe attend. It's really varies in terms of the people that come, but in terms of businesses, absolutely, it's a great evening out to sort of have everybody there. I think the price is a really good price. I mean, yes. I think if you want to go out and you don't necessarily want to go into the town and you don't want to sort of be with obviously younger people, you know, not saying, you know, we're obviously getting on a little bit, but I'm saying if you know, if you want to have a nice evening out with a nice meal and a bit of entertainment and a disco afterwards, you want to have a bit of a dance, and it's a perfect night out, really.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So good. If you want to come along, you can just call our little Louise. Louise in the office is our comedy queen.
And it's not just any comedy night, is it? Because it's actually the official comedy club, the original comedy club.
It's not Martin White on stage, is
no,
it?
No, or Brian.
Yeah, it won't be that good.
So it's actually a bona fide thing, isn't it? Which is great.
And it's every Friday.
Last Friday of the month.
The only month we don't do is August. So the next one, obviously, after this on the 27th of September. And then we do two in the month of November. So you can obviously do Christmas party nights for comedy.
Right. I was going to say you wouldn't do last Friday in December.
Boxing Day, maybe, or something. I don't know. No, we don't do that one. No.
Yeah. Shame. Taken over by other things.
Would have been nice to get out, yeah. Now, something else that you do is you run some business networking as well once a month, which I happen to know.
You happen to know because you're part of it.
Because I'm part of it, yeah. And in fact, you had one, or we had one last week, didn't we?
I know, we did. We had some mocktails.
We had mocktails on the night, which was fabulous.
We can't be, you know, thinking of drinking and driving, so we did mocktails. I personally made those mocktails, if I'm honest, didn't I? And I served them, hosted with the mostest we was.
Absolutely. You were fabulous on the night. So, what's your thinking behind that in terms of why you would want to run a networking event at the hotel, for example, because that's not the only one you do. You host other networking meetings.
Yeah, we do. And I think I've only obviously been at the hotel for 15 months, and just discussing with Brian earlier about having networking, it's about, you know, Ashford International Hotel is really key within Ashford, but how many people have been there recently? How many people have walked through the door? Maybe they all know it. Yeah. So the whole point of why I wanted to work with Martin, obviously, and we work with the MS Kent, obviously, and the FSB to hold that networking once a month, is to get new people through the door to experience what there is. And although it's confusing for some people because we try to do it in a different room, don't we? Like once a month, obviously we're somewhere else around the hotel. Yeah. The reason why we do that is because people get to experience different areas of the hotel.
That's a really good point, actually, because you know what you were saying about getting people to come back into the hotel. because you might not have been in for a while, and you want people to kind of think of it as somewhere they can go and have a meeting, for example. I mean, Graham and I were talking about, you know, last time we met at the Ashford International, because it's easy from Hastings and it's easy from where I am. So, you know, just it's kind of a nice central it's point to meet,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can obviously have come into the lounge and obviously order a coffee, et cetera. Mm. We offer free Wi-Fi, so mm-hmm. there's plenty of space. And I quite like the atrium because it does have those areas, doesn't it, where you can feel like you're having a private meeting, although you're obviously within a public area. So that's quite nice in terms mm. of the space that's there to mm. offer. Mm.
It's really good to know, actually, and I think it's absolutely the correct attitude, because I think it's an opportunity for you to showcase what you do and your facilities. You want to show how good it is to all local businesses, mm. don't you? Mm. Because there's spin-offs from that. So because there'll be, you know, large firms of solicitors or accountants or whatever that come to want to book their Christmas parties or conferences or I don't know, have visitors that come and pop them up overnight, all that kind of stuff.
That's... Yeah, it doesn't have to be anything, you know, huge. It's not necessarily about somebody coming in and wanting to book 100 people for a conference. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've talked to Martin and we've worked with a gentleman called Paul, haven't we, that's starting up some new things, and it's small businesses.
Small,
you know,
workshop.
And actually, in terms of Graham, we're working with some small, you know, coming businesses in terms of smaller workshops to help them grow that, obviously, and getting people in. So, I think the whole point is you need to be a little bit open and realise that people need to come in the door, obviously, that maybe haven't been into it before. You don't actually know, you know, so it's a little bit less of the computer says no, because the computer tell me I can do a free tea and coffee, they'd probably just give me a heart attack. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, we're very open to obviously just doing something along those lines to work with the local community.
Yeah.
But I mean, for me, the key to sort of good marketing is just kind of being top of mind. And the fact that you're encouraging people through all these various different initiatives to just come through the door, you know, without having to kind of spend lots of money, just means it's kind of drip, drip, drip. And so, you know, you know, automatically. I mean, I've been talking to you about running a charity ball, haven't I, later on this year. And you were just automatically the kind of the default for me, because, you know, who's going to want to come all the way down to where I live? I need something more central that people can access, that's kind of more on their doorstep. And we were talking about your banqueting offer, weren't we, in that context? Because you've got a banqueting offer on at the moment, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, so we're really trying to drive more banqueting. And banqueting, in terms of people say, what on earth is that? Is anything for an end-of-year sporting dinner or a charity gala ball or even just sort of a birthday, in terms, obviously, for maybe a key 40th, 50th or even 21st again, as I'm, you know, celebrating very soon.
Tomorrow.
And the banqueting offer is £39 per person. Includes your complimentary room hire, obviously, or included in that, a disco, a three-course meal and a selfie mirror by a lovely lady that I work with in terms of Tracy does the selfie mirror, and they're just great fun. So the point is, if you have £39 and that includes everything that you need to hold your event, you then maybe sell tickets if you need to for anything, you know, from £50 to £60 or whatever you feel the need is to sell it, and then that money will go straight to the charity.
And
you do all the table decorations as well, so I haven't got to worry about that.
Absolutely not. So we've definitely got a pool of things we can use, and you know, it does depend on your taste, but we've got things like lanterns and we've got things like black chair covers, etc., just to make the room look great. So all you've got to do is rock up, but you do have to sell tickets in the first day to people to come, but then you can just turn up in the evening and everything is done for you,
which I think is a massive benefit, because, you know, having seen my wife toiling away at my 50th birthday party celebrations in May, that is a big...
Are you 50,
a big
Martin?
Plus. Yeah. Well, let's not.
He is now,
Lynette. Let's not go down that road. that is a massive kind of plus for me. Because, you know, we, as you say, it's really just about turning up on the day then and not having to worry about any of the kind of the operational side of it and the logistics and all the rest of it. So.
And you're always going to worry, if you're doing a charity event, you know, you've got to obviously do things like raffle prizes or, you know, anything else like that. But the point is, on the evening, you should be there to enjoy it as well.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. That's great. Okay. We can't let you go today without talking about the C word.
Oh, Christmas.
Christmas.
Because
it's not... Graham's in a very cheery mood today. So, but the reality of Christmas is that you have to book early... To avoid missing the boat, don't you?
Absolutely. I think we've got about 25% to 30% of our business on the books already for Christmas of this year and Christmas parties.
Gosh.
And just last week I had my first 2020 inquiry for Christmas.
Wow.
So absolutely, you need to sort of really get in early, But I think people just think of Christmas parties, but we obviously do Christmas Day, you know, Christmas festive packages, but we're doing some lunches as well this year. So we're doing some tribute evenings of Soul Kind of Wonderful and the Country Superstars. So they're sort of tributes in the evenings. But we also feel that there's definitely a market out there of those people that don't necessarily want to come out in the evenings. They're quite happy to come out in the afternoon. So we're doing a boogie lunch for that. And we're also doing a country sort of afternoon as well, with obviously the Dolly Parton, not the Dolly Parton. Lovely lady Sarah, who's obviously
she only works
Ashford.
9 to 5. See what I did there?
Very good. Very good.
So we're doing those, and obviously our Christmas parties plus tribute evenings as well. So there's loads going on with Christmas, and at the moment we do have an offer on, because I know you're going to ask me, Martin.
Oh, absolutely.
See, so the offer is, if you wanted to book and pay your deposit for 10 people or more on the number of events, obviously before the end of July, so you have to book and pay your deposit a minimum of 10 guests before the 31st July and choose one of the following. So a complimentary room, bed and breakfast for the organiser, a free space for the organiser, 11th free place, or, this is a very exciting one, a drinks package per table to include a bottle of wine and 5 bottles of beer and 2 bottles of water. That's quite a popular one at the moment.
Yeah, I bet. Gosh, that's worth a few quid, isn't it?
Yeah, free water, that's great.
And that could be...
It's sparkling, you know.
Oh, well, that's okay. That, yeah, I wouldn't be interested in the beer. And Whitey wouldn't be interested in the wine. It's the water that's the magnet there.
Yes. Got to keep yourself hydrated in
this
hot weather.
It's good for the drivers.
Yeah. Responsible drinking.
Absolutely.
So... That's on a booking of 10 people, but that could be an afternoon booking, or it could be an evening booking.
It can be a Christmas
booking.
Party booking, obviously, so yes, or an evening. So we're not doing, excludes the comedy and the tribute nights.
Yes,
but it does include all the other parties, so yeah, they're available, and they're coming running from all through December, really.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. Mm. And in terms of, you've got a brochure, haven't you?
I think
that's got all of your Christmas offers on it. Is there a link to that on your website as well?
There is a link on the website, yes. So it's under www.ashfordhotel.co.uk, and obviously it's under the offer of the seasonal offerings.
Yes. So, and I mean, you can, I guess you've got the option of joining a kind of a large Christmas party on the night where there'll be other businesses and other people present, and you pay a per person rate for that, do
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so it's from $41.95 per person.
Right.
You can obviously join a joiner party, or obviously if you wanted to host a party, obviously, for yourselves in terms of the number of people, there is minimum numbers, and they do apply depending on what room you were looking to host that in.
Okay. So there's all sorts of options, as there always is, around Christmas. And but it'd be nice to actually get it booked and then forget about it, wouldn't it, I think? Graham, what do you guys do for your Christmas bash? Because you're at the top of a sort of a high-rise building, which isn't necessarily the best place to have a Christmas party,
no,
is it?
No, we
have an abseiling party.
No, we tend to go out in Hastings or Bexhill.
Right.
That well-known place for frivolity.
So,
we normally go out. The team up in Essex, we've got a team in Essex, tend to go out. In Essex. Roger comes down to see us in Hastings or Bexhill, wherever we are. But the social committee will be looking very soon.
Absolutely.
At where we go and what we do.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. It's never really that early. People genuinely think, oh, God, Christmas. But like I say, if you get it booked and you pay a deposit, then you haven't got to really worry about it. And you've got all those other presents you need to buy, obviously, in September, October, November, but you're done.
And then you can just kind of dial out of all that noise that's going on, because you're sorted, aren't you?
I always book early.
Book early and forget about it,
as Fred Ponting used to say.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. Right, Lynette, tell us what else is going on at the hotel.
What else is going on?
What other exciting things have you got happening? Are you spending any money on new facilities, for example? Is there anything like that going on?
I mean,
it must
really
be a continuous process, I would imagine, to keep a hotel looking good.
So as of March of this year, we are now managed by a company called Alma Rose Hotels. They manage 20 hotels across, obviously, the UK, all the way from Scotland, all the way down to the Ashford in Kent.
Mm-hmm.
And they've obviously spent money on a number of those properties over the time. So obviously, hopefully, Ashford is in line for a little bit of spend. What that will be and when it will happen, at the moment, we don't know. But obviously we're hoping with a new management company that there'll definitely be some spend coming into Ashford, which is nice because it's not had a huge refurbishment in the last 12 years.
Right, so that's exciting.
So that would be really exciting to see. And maybe next time on the radio I'll be able to announce what that's going to look
That'll be lovely, yeah. Yeah, maybe some new spa facilities or something like that. Maybe
so you can have a pedicure.
A new sauna or steam room or something. I love all of that, yeah.
He does now.
But I know what you are. One thing you are very excited about next year. What is the golf.
Oh, my goodness. We're so excited about the Golf Open next year.
Yeah, and you know all about it. So why is it good for you? Why is it? What do you think is going to...
I don't think it's good for, obviously, the Ashford International, but I genuinely think it's good for Kent. I actually am really passionate about Kent and what Kent has to offer. And anybody that follows me on LinkedIn will always talk about the fact that I do like a little weather update in terms of what's going on and why don't you come down to Kent and visit the great places. So I
you're
think
always,
it's just like...
Whenever you post something on LinkedIn, you're always at a winery or somewhere kind of where all of us would like to be enjoying yourself. So how do you get all these invites to these wonderful things?
I mean, it's all in the name of research, if I'm honest.
Research.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Kent is the wine garden of England, you know, so I need to try these wines to be able to recommend them to the customers at the hotel.
Yes. Of course.
I get it now. So, of course, you've got quite a lot of buying clout, haven't you, I would imagine, locally as a hotel. So people butter you up, don't they?
Absolutely. Do you know, I'm absolutely really excited at the hotel. We have actually just started selling some local produce, which is just amazing to think that we can do that. And we want our staff to be able to go to these events, talk to them, so actually we can talk to our customers. Because genuinely, it's not just about customer service, about customer experience. So that's one of the reasons why we've decided to actually... So we're now serving Chapel Down and Curious Brew, because obviously that's in Ashford and that's key. And Biddenden Vineyards, we're serving some wine from there, and the Copper Rivet gin that's in
Medway.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what I'm really excited about in terms of Kent as a destination. So I have to go to all these places to try wine and gin for the purpose of the customers.
Absolutely.
Let me know if there's an assistance job going. Fancy doing that in August. isn't that a lovely thing to be able to do as a local hospitality centre? It's a kind of feature, all those kind of local products. And I mean, there's Kent Crisps as well, which I think are based at Quex Park near me in Birchington. And, you know, what some of the local supermarkets are getting very good at now, you know, Waitrose and Asda and places, is kind of featuring those kind of locally produced products, which I think is great.
I went to Waitrose in Essex. My daughter goes to ballet in Essex on a Saturday, and I had to buy the teacher an end of bottle of beer one. And as I went in there, there was Chapel Down. How could I not buy her Kentish wine in Essex? It was amazing. Yeah.
So that's wonderful, isn't it? It's everything's... Seems to be kind of, there seems to be a more local focus on things, which is nice.
The call is getting stronger, I think, for locally produced stuff, and you should. You absolutely should.
Is that the same in Sussex? Are you seeing that as well locally?
Yeah, very much so. Particularly, we've dealt with a lot of craft brewers in East Sussex and some of the local vineyards as well. I have tried a few of them. They're very good. But I think people are looking for something different in what they buy. I think people are more and more fed up with, you know, what's on your typical shelves in Asda and Sainsbury's. And, just looking for that, something a little bit different. I had my first ever bottle of Chapel Down over the weekend.
Right.
Admittedly, it was on offer. So I thought, oh, well, I'll give that a go.
Yeah. Why not?
Very nice it was too.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like to try things that are a little bit different.
Yeah, superb. All for it. Lynette, it's been wonderful talking to you. There's so much going on at the hotel. I guess the key message is, look, if you're thinking of doing anything at all,
Lynette,
socially, talk to Lynette at the Ashford International Hotel. Socially or business, absolutely. Brilliant. Good. We're kind of fast coming to a close. We've only got a minute left, Brian. Is there anything that you just want to kind of give a shout out for before we disappear? I know you've got a networking on Thursday this week at Dartford Football Club.
Yeah, I mean, we'll cut it to a minimum. But yeah, BBM, from a BBM point of view, we have the Dartford meeting this Thursday. Mm-hmm. As you say, at Dartford Football Ground.
Hottest day of the year, 35 degrees. But
38 on my phone,
38,
it's saying.
But 7 o'clock in the morning, so...
If not earlier, I'll be there for 6:30. Mm-hmm. Definitely in my shorts. So with as little clothing as possible. It could be that kind of networking event,
I think. It will be.
And then, of course, the following week, we have BBM Bromley on the 31st.
Right.
At Bromley Football Ground on the Wednesday, and then back with mine, BBM Maidstone, on the 2nd of August, would you believe?
Brilliant. Well, on that note, we look forward to seeing you at one of those meetings soon. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, but for now, thank you to our wonderful guests.
Thank you.
And have a great week in the sunshine.
See you in a fortnight.
You're listening to Kent Biz Connect. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.